Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
There's a yellow rose in Texas I'm going there to see. No other fella knows her, nobody, only me. She cried so when I left.
The Antique Rose Emporium, located in Independence, Texas, is an 8-acre garden oasis showcasing antique roses as well as a myriad of other garden specimens. Owner Mike Shoup says that he believes in gardens with roses rather than rose gardens. Shoup is also known as the Rose Rustler for his tenacious, never-ending quest to find and revive lost or forgotten roses that were popular in gardens of early Texas and throughout the world. The roses are often rescued from pioneer cemeteries and abandoned homesteads. Come along and join us as we visit with the legendary Rose Rustler at his Independence Emporium, Mike Shoup.
Promised to come back again and never let me go. She's the sweetest rose of color a cowboy ever knew. Her eyes are bright as diamonds.
Mike, this is an absolute honor and a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. It's just a beautiful evening.
Before we get going, I want to know about the yellow rose of Texas. Somebody told me it's not from Texas.
Well, there's a lot of folklore about the yellow rose of Texas. Several stories abound. One of my favorite is that the true yellow rose of Texas was a mulatto lady who entertained Santa Anna the night before he had to fight. And he was so exhausted the next day that Texas quickly won. And so that's how Texas got its independence. So she's the true yellow rose of Texas. But if you talk about it horticulturally, I think folklorists look to the fields in the deserts of Texas and they see yellow flowers that abound. And if you go out and look at them, they look like perfect roses, but they're on cacti. It's the Opuntia cactus that is all over. And so that may have been the true yellow rose of Texas as well. And if you really want to talk about if it's a true rose, then the story might be of Harrison's yellow or of the Lady Banksia rose, which were certainly around when Texas was a republic. And so it could have been that rose that they were writing about.
Let's get to the heart of the matter here, and that's you as a rose rustler. That's cool.
Well, Texas rose rustling conjures up this image of this, you know, black-clad horseman riding on his horse in the middle of the night with a shovel tossed over his shoulder so that he can pillage the neighborhood of all their plants. But that image was really for publicity. The truth of the matter is it's really the search and rescue of lost and forgotten roses. And there's so many wonderful roses that have survived through the test of time, living in places like cemeteries where a loved one would honor the deceased and plant a rose by their headstone. And lo and behold, many years later, you know, the family may have passed on, but the rose continued to live, a true time-tested survivor.
Tagline that you got out of that.
Well, certainly. If you have roses that live in cemeteries, you know, if dead people can grow them, then anybody can.
I love it.
That's the Texas Rose Rustler's motto. But it really kind of points to another thing, and that is that these are the roses that have proven themselves. They're not the weaklings that have long since died. You're only privy to the ones that have not had the help from human hands that have been able to survive. So if we're bringing them back into our modern gardens, we have a wonderful source of plants that are tough, that belong in our modern gardens. Not only that, when we do research about these roses and we bring them into our gardens, we realize they have virtues and traits that modern roses don't have. Modern roses, being bred for their perfect flowers, have a lot of the characteristics that were inherent in the older varieties that really make them charming, like fragrance, like diversity of form, where they can fit and embellish architecture of home, to be planted with other plants, not to be quarantined in a rose garden.
Would the older roses typically be a tea sort of scent, or is there the whole breadth?
It's the whole breadth, and that's what's so nice about old garden roses, is that the fragrance is kind of the emotional tie that a visitor might have with this rose. I remember fondly when we first put on our climbing Cecile Bruner, the climbing sweetheart rose, and an elderly lady came up to the rose, and you can almost, you know, as she smelt the rose, she turned around and with tears welling up in her eyes says, "I haven't smelt that since I was with my mother 30 years ago." It's that kind of vehicle that fragrance is. It takes you back. It is the memory. It's the tie. It's the emotional tie. And many of these old garden roses have that nuance of fragrance, many of them in different forms.
You were saying earlier they have an intensity of aroma that you might not get today on a hybrid.
Many of our modern roses, unfortunately, have been bred for their perfect form, but fragrance was not one of the characteristics that they bred for them. So fragrance is lacking. In my way of thinking, if you hold up a beautiful rose and you smell it and it doesn't have any fragrance, you could just as well be looking at a beautiful rose in a book. There's nothing that makes it different. They're both beautiful, but fragrance transforms that quality into one of memory and one of emotional tie. And so many of the old garden roses have damask, have tea, have lemon, have different types of fragrances which help you remember that particular situation when you smell them.
Is it easy to take cuttings of a rose and to stick them right in the soil and grow?
Yes. Roses are very forgiving about their ability to root for you. And we have several methods that we suggest will work for the homeowner or for the explorer. When you find a rose, you can take a cutting of a stem that's a little less than pencil size and diameter, preferably on a rose that's just bloomed. That's the perfect age. 4-inch cutting is a good size with a couple of leaves on it. We take those, if we're lucky to be able to get a couple of cuttings from a rose without hurting that rose, then that's what we'll do. Bring it back to our greenhouse by putting it into wet paper towels in a baggie, preferably in a cool ice chest or somewhere where it doesn't get hot. Once we get it back to the nursery, we'll stick it into some well-drained potting soil, maybe in a little pot under a mist system. Now, the homeowner can use a Ziploc bag of potting soil that's moist, and can put the cuttings in that and zip that Ziploc bag.
A little baby greenhouse.
That's right. It's a terrarium.
Yeah.
And it holds the humidity in there so the plant doesn't dry out. Put it on an east-facing window because that won't get too hot.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it offers enough sunlight for it to have the energy to form roots. And usually in a 3 to 4 week time, that cutting will root and you'll see roots coming out to the edge of the plastic. And then you'll know you can transplant it into a pot. But that's the best way to root roses. We do it spring and fall. Those are the two seasons that are best as well.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good. And how about first line of defense? I've heard that neem oil is quite good.
Well, here at the Rose Emporium, we've kind of employed a whole new regimen. When I first started, I was part of the chemical plan where I would spray with insecticides and fungicides. Quickly learned that all I was doing was promulgating the need to keep doing that. Mm-hmm. And I just hated that. And it ruined my love of gardening. We discovered that Mother Nature doesn't do that, and most of the plants default to health with her. So we wanted to mimic what Mother Nature was doing, and so we would plant a diversity of plants, roses and perennials and different things. And then we took and started making sure that they were well mulched, creating their own compost. As the microbes would break down the mulch, they would provide the living soil that provided the nutrition and all the bonuses that you get from that type of compost and from that kind of mulching effort. But even more miraculous was the fact that we took compost. And we learned this from a Dr. Elaine Ingham, who taught us that if you can take compost and all the good microbes, the bacteria, the fungi, the things that are actually have been created liaisons with plants since the beginning of time, take these good guys that are in compost and actually grow them. And so we would put them in a nutrient solution of water with some fish fertilizer or fish emulsion or fish proteins, which is their food source, along with some molasses and umates and some of the things that they feed on, and then aerate it. Make sure that it's aerated like with an aquarium bubbler. Therefore, they have the oxygen that's necessary. They don't go anaerobic, which would create the stinky smells and certainly not produce the type of life that you want to put on plants. But the aerobic bacteria or the aerobic populations of microbes are all the beneficial ones. And so we created a super population of this material by doing this, sprayed it on our foliage in our nursery and our herbs and our plants and even our vegetables. And lo and behold, we had plumper leaves, much healthier plants, even plants that had mildew. It was like the good guys would eat the mildew and the black spot off the foliage.
Mm-hmm.
So now we use this approach totally in our garden. It's totally organic, and the health of our plants is like it's never been, and it's a joy to be in it. We have the life of the garden is full with birds, butterflies, bees, and it's just a whole lot more pleasant.
And that's basically your first and last line of defense then.
That's correct. We just kind of mimic what Mother Nature does, embellish that, try to create a hypodermic needle, if you will, of the good guys that live in compost, and they are your armies. They are the ones that mine for your micronutrients. They are the ones that mine for the fertilizers. They are the ones that help gather water for your plants, as well as the defenses for fighting off the predators. So it's just a simple message and very common sense, but it has worked wonderfully for us.
Some of the new modern hybrid roses are almost so perfect, so picture postcard. Do you ever, by coincidence, bump into some ancient abandoned rose growing in a cemetery that you go, oh my gosh, what a specimen?
You know, the beauty of roses is their diversity. And a lot of the modern roses have been bred for that beautiful high center and for the layers of multi-petals that imbricate over themselves and the strong stems that they are. They're truly exhibition roses. And that's what the breeders have achieved and wanted to achieve. But when you go to an old rose, you go into a different form. Some are quartered, some are flat, some are thickly petaled like cabbages, and that's the cabbage rose name for some roses. Some are single. But all of them have a charm and a beauty that is very endearing based on your association with them or your efforts in growing them. And so that's what's important. To think that a rose has to be a certain form does not make it beautiful. Many of these old garden roses, because they have nodding form and dripping qualities and different quartered looks, are charming in their own right because of that.
How about diseases relative to the old pre-hybrid?
I think that that's one of the other things that make old garden roses stand out, is the fact that they're typically more disease resistant. They haven't had the breeding to the extent that they have become weak. And so you're dealing with a rose that has been able to withstand the onslaughts of mildew and black spot and live despite it.
It isn't that they don't get it, it's that it doesn't.
Exactly. They don't succumb from it. So what's nice about that is you as the gardener don't have to put the backpacks on and spray them. Mm-hmm. You know that they're going to be here for the long haul, and that's what makes old roses so charming.
Do you have an online mail order business where somebody could look and select and have shipped?
We are all about making sure that people have access to these roses, and we have a mail order business. We love our gardens here in Independence, and we have one in San Antonio, and we sell them to the people that come here. But we also sell nationwide via mail order, and we ship these roses in actually 2-gallon size containers, large, well-established plants that weigh about 8 pounds each.
And your background?
My wife and I went to Trinity University. I specifically was interested in the life sciences, graduated in biology, and then I went on and further had a degree in horticulture at Texas A&M. That's where I realized that this was kind of under my skin and had to do something with it, and had no idea I'd grow roses. I'd never had a fascination with roses. In fact, I swore I'd never have anything to do with roses. But the epiphany came when I found roses growing where they had no care from man's hands, knew that these plants were here to stay, and became involved with the old garden roses, the ones that truly have a lot of traits that our modern roses unfortunately have had bred out of them.
So it was a moment in a cemetery then where your life was changed.
Yes, I didn't die, but I certainly changed. Now I call myself a rosarian, something I swore I'd never do.
We've been speaking with Mike Hsu. For further information about the Antique Rose Emporium, log on to antiqueroseemporium.com or email Mike at roses@weareroses.com. For further information about Independence, Texas, log on to brenhamtexas.com. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from the Antique Rose Emporium in Independence, Texas.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort Maui at Wailea invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of four recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning, and Lauren Hayes is our technical assistant.